Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Link Automation and Scripting session this afternoon. I know it's been a long week, so hopefully it's coming to an end now. So just to introduce myself, my name's Philip Priestley, and I'm a Microsoft Certified Master, Microsoft Certified Solutions Master in Link, and I work for a company called Unified Squared, based out of the UK, and I'm a UC architect for them. So if we move on to this topics we're going to cover in today's session. So we're going to start out with just going through some basic PowerShell items and some link management shell tips that I've picked up through my experience in this. And then we're going to move on to storing information using scripts, using applications within scripts, carrying out bulk changes whilst using link scripts, and then doing some output and some error checking, and then also then moving on to using GUIs within PowerShell scripts. And then at the end, we've got some examples to show you of things that we've got scripts that are capable of doing. So just to warn people, for some of the guys in the room, I don't know, is there much scripting experience in the room? Many people done much scripting, happy with scripting, quite comfortable with scripting. So a few of the early parts might be a bit basic for a few guys in the room, but we'll kind of build up as we go through. So kind of be patient with me. So the first part we're going to do is going to move on to go through some basic PowerShell and some link management shell tips. So the first thing we're going to start with is kind of the basic levels of actually finding out what commands it is that you need to use and kind of find out what parameters are actually available in those commands. So a very helpful tool that I use is just the get help command, and then you're able to actually then just do a get help on the command that you're looking to use, and it will then easily pull up a list of parameters that you can use and switches that are available and kind of the general functionality of that rule. We can also do further detail. So this is kind of the basic view. You can also do a full detailed and example switches off of the get help, which will then pull out further details, which will help you when using commands. We can also do a help, and then we can do a star and search on certain letters, which will help us then bring up a list of certain commands. If it's like a certain topic or a certain area where you think you know what the command is, it's a very useful tool just for finding those commandlets. So after just basically get past the get help, we're just moving on to something quite simple when just actually writing commands within a PowerShell window. So it's very useful is tab complete. So it's very useful for those of you that are very good at fat fingering commands or just actually have really poor typing skills like myself, who have a habit of writing commands wrong. So essentially what we can do is we can start by just typing a new and then a switch, and then it'll allow us to actually then find the commands. And it's also really good for if we're then actually looking for longer commands that actually would then be quite easy to spell wrong or just type wrong. So it's a really quick, easy way of getting through commands and scrolling through commands when you kind of know the basics of the command but also need to find it. So moving on to tab complete, we get on to actually the actual application you use to write your scripts. So kind of a lot of people sort of start out using just Notepad to write very basic scripts. And then recently, about a year ago, I was introduced to PowerShell ISE, which makes life much easier due to the fact that actually it already has a lot of the commandlets in there, and we can also import additional modules into PowerShell ISE that can actually help us do the tab complete within the script. So rather than actually being in the PowerShell window, you can do this from the application, which makes writing the scripts and making sure the actual correct commands are the ones that you're inputting into the script, so you don't actually have to go back and check your typing in your script. And also, it's very good for color coding and sectioning your scripts. Okay. So, and also, when finding the scripts, we can also bring up the different parameters, which can help you with your following command. So, next part, a big thing around doing PowerShell scripts, and then also moving on to the link management shell, and also the exchange management shell, is the ability to basically be able to control different applications within the same script. But to be able to perform this, we need to be able to import modules. So a standard, you won't get the AD, the link or the exchange within the PowerShell script, but we can run a simple import dash module and then link or exchange. And then that gives us the ability to then bring up exchange command, link command. And the good thing about the link commands as well is that they all start, so it's either new, set, or get, and dash, and then they'll all start with CS, so it's very easy to find them and not be searching for another command for a different application. So as you can see here, we can just do a new dash CS, and then we can do a tab complete, and it finds the first one in the list, which is the address book configuration. Okay. So Now we've got past the actual ability to actually be able to pull some of the commands through and to pull link commands through. We're kind of moving on to kind of updating the functionality. So a useful thing to add to this is using the pipe and being able to pipe commands. So essentially what this allows us to do is filter searches. So we can do a search on a GetCS user, which would typically bring through a large amount of data. But it could be the case where we only want a certain amount of that data. So in this example here, the first one we have, we're just searching, we're getting all link users that are enabled. So it also quickens up the process of searching for that command. Because if you ran just a GetCS user and put it into a variable and then actually then had to do something called that, you're actually doing two searches against the database, whereas this will only search for the users where the object is actually enabled. So it can speed up scripts as well. And the second example here is actually then once we've actually got that information, we're actually then piping it to actually be able to do something with it, which in this case is we're exporting it to a CSV file. So we actually then have a list of all our enabled users, so we can then use that to do something else with it. But we'll get onto that later. Also at the bottom, there's a link to be able to actually go to a TechNet page, which actually gives you more information on the pipe and some of the different things you can do with it and some of the filtering that's available. You can also do a get help about pipeline as well. Just to say that this deck will be available afterwards, so there's no rush to take any of the links or anything down. So after we have pipe and we've got imported the modules, the other important area is when running a script from PowerShell is if you're running it from a local machine or from, say, an admin machine, we actually need to be able to have the ability to connect to either Link or Exchange or another application, which is done through a remote connection. And to give us the ability to do this, we need to be able to create a remote session. So there's essentially three elements to this. The first part being we actually need to input our credentials to give us access to those sessions. And then we have to be able to create our session variables so we actually know what to connect to and how to connect to that device. And then the last part is we actually then need to import that session into the current PowerShell session that we're running to be able to perform commands against the application. So the first element and the first way we do this is we create a user credential variable, and then we just run the get credential command, which will then give us the pop-up window you see on the screen, which then enables you to enter your AD credentials or any other credentials you may need to access the application. So once we have our credentials, it gives the ability to set up our session variables. So we can, within the link session variable here, we're able to open up a new PS session. We can state our connection URI, and then we can also pass through the credentials that we created in the previous step. So this is relevant for Link, and also Exchange would be very similar to this as well. So then once we have our session defined and how we want to actually connect to the application, we actually need to then create that session. So essentially we just run the import-ps-session command, as you see above, and then the connection should connect, and then it'll download all the relevant commandlets that are available for us to use, and then we get confirmation that we've connected. And we don't get a screen of red when it doesn't work. So now we've just run through some basic sort of tips of what we can use within scripts and sort of what we can use with PowerShell to enable us to actually connect to Link itself. Just run through some general tips I've picked up through my experience of using of creating scripts and some of the things that I do and don't do and probably should do more of. Just to start with, pick an editor that you're comfortable with. So I've mentioned before, most people start with Notepad, which it works, but it's a very simple way of doing it, and so it doesn't give you any sort of assistance in any tab complete or any sort of color coding to define variables or anything like that. So I know there's some other kind of ones out there that other people prefer to use, and some that you have to pay for that will give you some more assistance within the script and do some better debugging and things like that. So it's kind of personal choice on that front. The next one I'd say is before you actually write a script with commands in, actually test your commands directly against the Link environment, so you actually know the commands that you're running actually are doing what you want them to do and also returning the information that you're then looking to use further down the script. Also, it just makes life easier going forward, so you're not troubleshooting the actual commands, you're just troubleshooting the process that the commands are running. The next one, which sort of anyone that's done this kind of scripting will understand, is you need to comment against your code so you actually know what certain sections of your code are doing. This is kind of what you're comfortable with and what kind of fits with your scripting. Because the worst thing possible is you go back to a script that you haven't touched for a year and you can't actually remember what it does. Or the worst example is you get given a script that someone else has written and you can't tell what it's doing and they've not put any comments in it and it's just a long line of code, which can be a bit of a nightmare to then debug and often can be quicker just to start rewriting it. Next one is always test in a lab. It's the worst thing, running a test script against the live environment and say you've just gone and disabled 1,000 users without knowing what you were doing, which can be quite more common than you'd think. So yeah, always test in a test lab and then be able to test and sort of tweak and find any errors that you may have in your script before using it on a live environment. It's also good for kind of testing scripting as well to build the lab itself. Because if you see it later, it can be a good example just for using, playing with creating bulk scripts and things to create different user accounts and things, and then being able to use scripts for your live environment to actually then manage those users. The next bit is always use transcript. So we'll go into more detail in a bit what transcript is and what transcript can give you. But using transcript on your script then allows you to actually record all the actions that have occurred while the script ran. So then you can, it's essential for basically going and debugging it later and also providing a record of what the actual script did and what operations it performed. And the other bit is whenever you run any commands, run them under verbose. So essentially then we get the full list of what the script was doing in the background, not just the single line that it's actually run and what the actual result of it was. It'll give you the actual information for what's happened and also the errors and more detail in the error. Next one on is essentially it's important that when you create a script and giving it to other people or even giving it to a customer, that you need to sign your script with a certificate. So typically you can just get these certificates from a third party to use with your script. And basically what this allows is that one, that you know if you've given a script to a customer and then they come back and it says it doesn't work, if you would then ask for a copy of the script they were running, you can easily tell that they've actually edited it or changed something in it because the certificate block will no longer be there and it will no longer run. So it gives you that assurance that essentially if they come back to you and say it doesn't work anymore, you can say, well, what have you changed in it? Because I can tell that it's been changed, which is very useful. And the last bit is remember to name them .ps1 files. Okay, so moving on. So now we're getting on to storing and using information. So now we're getting on to actually doing some more useful things with the script. So in this, we're just going to discuss basically how we can actually then record information, pull information out, manipulate that information, then actually do something with it and action it or create reports off the back of that. So the first part of storing and using information is actually creating variables within a script. So basically a variable allows you to store static or dynamic content and then define information in the script. So essentially we can just store a lot of information in a multitude of variables. So we have just examples of three different types of variables we can have here. So we can have a static variable where essentially it's something that that's a known item that we can set and we can do consistent results against. So just an example, it's my link front-end server. The next type we have is a system-generated one. So a very typical one is just to set the date. So it's quite useful in the script and on naming outputs to actually timestamp things. And that's the command that we'd use to get the date field. And then also we have a user input variable. So essentially we can then, using the command on screen, we can then put a pop-up within the PowerShell window to actually say, could you please enter the information you require? So essentially this is very useful when having to use an input file or a CSV file. We can then ask them for the file path and the file name without having to hard code it. So there's also some special system variables that we have. So this is just a small example of a few that are quite useful. So variables here, so we have last exit code. So it shows, it'll give you the resulting code from the last command that was run in that session. $home, it specifies the user's home directory, which can be good for outputting data and easier than specifying, having to specify a hard-coded file path. And then also we have $_, which then contains the object in the current pipeline. There's also a large list of this information that you can find. And it also, again, it's just a get help command that you can run to pull that out. So now we move on to arrays. And essentially what an array allows us to do is store a vast amount of information in an indexed form. So it then essentially allows us to then run processes against that index and we can then get consistent results from the information we find. So just an example of a simple array is the one at the bottom, where it's just been an example of we could just input three servers, which then we then going forward would actually then want to do a for each loop on them to actually then perform actions against multitude of those servers. We'll get more into the for each and the loop later on in the deck. So now we're moving on to using applications within scripts. So where this becomes useful is not all applications are PowerShell aware, especially a lot of third-party apps and things that you'll find with Link. There's lots of little tools that are quite useful to use, but a lot of them are a per-user command. So say, for example, you have to do it on 500 users, it's not so much fun doing it individually. So what we can do is we can use a PowerShell script to wrap those applications. So at Unify Square, we have an example of this where we have an application that we can use for configuring call forward settings, but it's a per-user setting. And so we have a number of customers who want to do it in bulk. So we created a PowerShell script that we could wrap around it to be able to do this bulk settings by just importing a CSV file. So the way we do this, or the way you can do this to run applications within your script, is just an example of different commands that can be used to do this. So we can just do an invoke expression, and then the actual application or script you then want to run. Or we can do it where we can do the invoke command, and we can give the file path, and we can actually specify which computer we want to run it against. Or we can actually then just do the $\ and run the application. So moving to more detail. And then another part of coming through running the application is it's important that when you're running an application, often you want to actually see the result of that operation. Similar to how we were saying earlier about the transcript and recording what it's done, it's the same with applications. And so the way we achieve this is by using the two right arrow and one. And basically what this does is then it then redirects the output from the application into then a string that we can define below. So what this then does, in the example I was giving before with our call forwarding utility, we can then pull from this whether the actual action that it completed was successful or not, which you'll see later in the example. We've got this is part of the example I have at the end, so it can show you what happens when we get the format and what we can then do with that output, and then what actions we can put off the back of that. So moving on. So now we'll just get on to bulk changes, and basically this is kind of essentially one of the most important parts of scripting in Link. So as you get into Link, as you get into larger environments, it's very painful to be doing individually changes, and so it becomes very powerful to be able to do changes in bulk and being able to do, say, you have more than a couple of thousand users. This is basically the only really way you could admin those users in any sensible manner. So how do we do things in bulk? So basically, as discussed earlier, when we have our arrays, we then bring in functionality, which is a for each loop, which essentially allows us to pull all that information that we have in that array and actually then be able to create commands off the back of all those information. So to do bulk imports, we have a few options to input the data. So we can do a file import, which can be either from a CSV file, or we can use things like XML files, which then give us the data in a static form and a form that we a common form that's indexed that we know where it's going to be, and so we can actively action off of that. The other options we have is to do a pipeline, so we can do a command and a filter on that command and use that data in an array, or we can use a variable holding results from another command. So also on the back of that, off back of that PowerShell and the variables we were talking about, it's also then possible to do actions on that data within the array, because essentially we may have different data that we want to sort and create different actions from. So it opens up that we can do equals, not equals, greater than. There's also, this is just a short example of the different operators we can do. Again, there's a link to a website to be able to show you all the different operators and all the different functions that we can perform on that data to filter. So now, also another way off the back of the previous operations to filter information, we can also do checks on the variables. So if we have, for instance, the first two, essentially if we want to do a check, we've done a command, we've imported data, we actually then want to check that that data exists. So the top two commands is actually we can action if something does exist, do this. In the second example, it's essentially if something doesn't exist, then we need to do this. So common things around where this can be useful is if you're basically creating a file, you're outputting a file and you want to put it in a certain folder, and that folder doesn't exist, so we can do a check to see if that folder actually exists. And then the last one is we can do a check on the variable to check that it actually contains the information we want it to contain. So instance, a certain pattern, or on a previous command, if we've run something that's either successful or unsuccessful, we can then do the variable on whether that command was successful, which there's an example of this in one of the example scripts later that I can show you. So now we're actually getting on to how a for each loop works. So we start off rather simple here, and then we'll just build up into some more technical ones. So in this example, we're just creating a variable of basically trying to, we're going to find and display all the enable users we have in Link. So we do a simple get CS user, but then we also do a filter on that to only search for the enabled Link users. And once we get that information and we put it into our users variable, we then go into the for each loop. So we're specifying all the users within that users variable. And then within the brackets below, we're actually then performing that task on all of those users. So it's just a simple, this one just simply displays the user's SAM account name is enabled and writes it to the PowerShell screen. So very simple but basic, and just showing you how you do basic for each loop. Then this is an example of if we're doing a for each loop and importing data. This is how we'd commonly format a CSV file. So you can see we have headings on each of the columns. And this is what we can then call within the script to actually identify that information and run it against commands. So this is just a very simple one that is from like a test lab. So that a very easy CSV to use to create a group of test users. Okay. And then, so once we actually have that then CSV file, there's various different ways we can actually then import that into a script or use that to import into a script. So the first example is kind of a good static way of importing it. If you have a file that's commonly going to be put in a similar same place every day when you run the script, or if it's a scheduled task, you can get whatever's exporting the CSV to put it into a common place. It's not always the best place to put it on in a script because things change, people name files wrong, things like that. Then the second example is where we can actually use a user input variable and actually ask the user where the file is before it runs the rest of the script, which can be a safer method. So in this case, essentially, we just define our user input variable, and then we then use the user list equals import.csv to actually import that CSV file into our user list variable. There's also a third method, which we'll get onto later when we discuss using GUIs within script, where we can actually pop up a file explorer window to actually give the user a GUI to actually then go and search for the file and select the file itself. We'll show that later on. Okay, so the second example of where we're using a loop. So this time we're actually going to search for some users and actually do something against that user rather than just displaying it. So in this example, we're just discovering all the disabled Link users and then enabling them. So very similar to before, we just do the get CS user, then we filter on that object, and but this time we're looking for the false users, not the enabled users. And then once we have that information, we just run our for each loop on that information and then actually do a set user enable. Okay, so moving on. So now we need to look at that CSV information we were discussing before. Now we've actually imported that, we need to actually then know how to do something with it. So we have our user list, dollar user list, which is our variable, which is our imported CSV file, which is our array. We basically have that information, and now we need to do something with it. So if we just do the dollar user list.samaccountname, if we just type that in now into a PowerShell window, it essentially then pulls through all that list of names. So that's just showing you how we use the different elements within the array. So the next example is actually we then want to actually be able to use more than one column within that array and actually do something against it. So what we're going to do here is essentially enable that group of users that were in that CSV file and actually create all the users with the different settings that were set. So here you say we just simply do an import of the CSV file and then we do a for each loop. And then within the actual command you can see we're actually enabling CS user, but then we're actually identifying the user and making the user the actual SAM account name. And then we can specify the SIP address using the SIP URI column. And in this example, we've actually put a static register pool in. But if you wanted to have multiple front ends, what we could do is add an extra column to that CSV file that we saw previously and actually be able to then define which registrar pool we're going to connect to. Okay. So another common occurrence can happen with CSV files is commonly if you use a HR system and you export out of a HR system, to use as your set of user data. Typically, telurIs, as an example, come out in very different formats. So often, there's a couple of ways you can address this. Essentially, is you can either open Excel up and start doing some functions on the Excel rows to actually fix that data. But what you can also do is, if this is going to be quite a regular task, and it's going to come out in a defined format in the CSV itself, we can actually use the PowerShell script ourselves and actually manipulate that data before we have to run the script against it, which saves us a step in doing the Excel piece. So just an example here is the phone numbers are on the previous screen. You can see essentially are missing the plus for the fully 164 format, and then also the tell colon that we need for specifying the line URI within link. So what we can do is we can just do a simple create a new variable, which we've called here fully 164 number. Then all we need to do is actually put the tell colon the plus within in speech marks, and then we can essentially add it on the front of that input that we had before. And then moving on now, we can now include that into the script before. So as a second command, once we've created all those users, we now want to enable them all for enterprise voice and set that line URI. And this is what script allows us to do. So again, we have the information that we've pulled in from the CSV file, and then we start to do our for each loop. And now we've got this additional line in there, which then basically formats our telephone number in the correct format that we need to enable our user, and then we just use a set CS user, and then we specify the username, and then we specify the line URI that we've just created earlier, and then we set them to enterprise voice enabled to true. Okay, so now we're going to move past this into, we're going to do output and error checking. So the important part of when you start building up your scripts and getting to more complicated scripts is actually then knowing what that script's doing and actually making sure it's doing what you want it to do and that it's not causing you any additional errors or outputting information that you don't require. So the first step is what we talked about earlier is actually creating a transcript. So essentially what the transcript allows you to do is record all the information that actually happened within that script. So it'll record everything that you would typically see when running those commands in a window, and also all the errors that it pulls out and everything else. And the other part of this is don't forget to use the verbose when you run commands. So it gives us the full information for what actually happened and what that command actually did do and all the errors. Another nice thing we can do with when we're doing the transcript. So the other thing is you want to record sort of when that happened and what the time and the date was. So what a nice thing you can do is when we do the start transcript, we have to specify a file name, where to put the file. And so what we can do is we can use that get date variable from earlier to actually timestamp the name on the file. So if we move on, this is an example from a script that we have internally that we used to use for a customer to create a multitude of dial plans. So it's just a simple script that we can use to import dial plan settings from a CSV. But the important part here is that command where we set the variable transcript name. So essentially what we want to do is call our transcript file, we call it create dial plans, and then we stamp a date and time after it, so we know when we run it. Because obviously a lot of these scripts are going to run multiple times. So if you have an issue running a certain set of CSV files, you can then go back and look into the transcript file for what actually happened. So all we have to do is, at the beginning of your script, is just put the start transcript and then the file name, whether you want to do it in this format or not. And then literally at the end of the script to put the top transcript in, which will then create the transcript file. And you get confirmation at the end of the script that the transcript has run. And then here's just an example of the first part of a transcript that's been run that's created a dial plan with a number of normalization rules. Okay. So another important part is when doing scripting is being able to not just import data, but actually being able to output data and output into a format that you can then actually use. So a good example of this is when you're creating a script and you're enabling lots of users, you actually then need to know afterwards what's been successful and what's not been successful, and then potentially being able to use that output then to rerun the scripts in a different way or a different format to actually then fix the issue from before. So the common things we have here is we can use the add content and the output CSV to create a formatted file that we can then do these actions from. So an example of this is essentially, so what we're doing here is what we need to do is to create a CSV file. So what we'll do is we create a variable called output CSV, and as part of that we then create a file. And then with that variable then, we can then run the command below, which will essentially create our headers for our CSV file for our output. And essentially the important part here is using the add, so we have the fields that we've defined, and then we use the add content comment, and then the output CSV variable that we've defined before that defines the variables for our CSV file, which essentially is the name for the CSV file, and then the dash append, which will then append to that file. So essentially what we could do then is if you want to add another line of headers or a header on the field, we can then you could then have additional lines. And as long as you include the output.csv and the dash append, it would write to that file. So once we actually then have that file and we've defined the headers, we then actually want to put some information into that CSV file. So this is just an example from our CFC utility that we were discussing before, which is setting our call settings, which then we discussed getting the output from that command, and then we're actually going to write that into that SIP file. So what you can see here is we do an if command to check if it was modified, and then we stamp the data with a certain information. And so if I move on, there's a better example on this one. So this is actually the code example. So what we're doing here is we're actually doing an if on the command output, and if that command output contains was modified, so the command ran successfully, and we've pulled that through our output file, we write to the host that that user is having forward settings applied, and then we write a line of code into our CSV file, and then we do the else command, which then basically says if any have failed, we write a very similar action, but we basically write to screen that the command execution failed. And then also, when we write the data into the CSV file, we put the failure in instead of the success. So essentially, once we've run this command, this script, we can then go into this output CSV file, and then we have a list of the successful and the failed users. And also, then we'd be able to then go back into our transcript file that was run at the same time and actually find the errors that were on those users that failed. Okay, so now we get into error checking within a script. So these are just an example of some of the error variables that are in there by default. So the first one we've got here is $lastExitCode, which essentially contains, it is what it says essentially, it contains the code of the last error that was executed. Next one on is a $error, which is essentially an array in itself, which stores in a circular fashion all the errors that have occurred while using that session. And then as it's an array, we can use the $error 0 to pull the first one out, and also obviously then the other entries within it, because it's an array, it's all indexed. You also have the ability, if you need to and you want to record all of the errors going on, we can increase the error buffer by using that maximum error count. It's a personal choice if you want to record that many errors. And the other one at the bottom, the .error.clear, clears down that buffer, so you can get a clear error log. And also then, once you have this $error variable, we could then export that if we needed to see all the errors that occurred. Okay. So the other option we have with error is when you're running your own command, we can actually then pull all the errors from that command into our own error variable. And this is done by, on most of the link commands, you have an additional switch that you can use, which is the dash error variable, and then we can export it to our own file. So in this example of setting users, it's very useful to have, because obviously you don't want to go off creating lots of users and for them to actually be errors within those users. So you need to be able to define what actually happened while you're running those scripts. So here's an example of how we'd manage that. Okay, and so now moving on to where we find particularly useful on running a lot of management scripts within Link and to do a lot of monitoring is actually having the ability from PowerShell to actually be able to write into an event log. And the advantage of this is if you can get an error into the event log from a Link script, is then we can actually then create SCOM triggers on those events, and so then actually we can create warnings for things, issues, or we can actually then trigger an action to actually go and resolve an issue. So a couple of examples of areas where this is very useful is we can set up tests, schedule tasks to run a multitude of synthetic transactions on certain environments or certain scenarios that you actually want to be able to do it on, and then from that we can then actually create event log entries for then SCOM to go monitor and either email someone to alert them on that. Another really common area where this is very useful is I know a lot of people write backup scripts to run at night to basically dump address book information, dump config and all things like that, but a lot of the time they don't actually know until the next morning whether that's been successful or not, and it's not generally recommended to run a lot of this against a busy database in the daytime. So what you can do is, as part of your backup script, you can actually get it to trigger an event log. So essentially say, backup was successful, backup failed, and then obviously then have the SCOM trigger check on that event to actually then email somebody to say, backup's failed, information why the backup failed. And another one we have, which is an example we have later on, is an issue that we discovered in Link 2010, is if you're in an environment where you have hundreds of federated SIP domains, which is more common than you think, you can have an issue whereby it has to do a certificate check on all of those SIP domains, and you have a limited-sized certificate store within Link 2010, and Link 2010 has no mechanism for clearing that store down. So you can hit an issue whereby you fill that store up, which would then mean federation no longer work. It would also mean that your Access Edge service will probably go down too. So we have a process in a minute to actually show you how to actually go through then and actually create event logs on those issues as that certificate count gets higher, and actually then use a SCOM action to actually clear that down. So how do we actually write to an event log? So this is a simple command that you can use in your script to actually event. So we do a simple write dash event log, and then we specify where we actually want the log to go. So as it's link, we want to put it into the link server event. So we just do the link server, and then we put a source, so it's coming from the LS protocol stack. And then we put our entry type. So here we can have information, warning, or error. And then we got into the event ID. So event ID, this one is a custom event ID. So what I'd advise here is you can essentially use any number you like, but there's a lot of commonly known event IDs, so try and avoid anything that's used by the application or other applications to avoid confusion. And obviously, we actually need to input the message and input the information that actually comes from that. So we'll get into more of this later when I show the example of actually how we're using this for certificate logs, but we'll come back to that. So the next section is actually using GUIs within a script. So essentially the way we do this is by we can actually use .NET calls within PowerShell to actually create these GUIs. So there's a multitude of things you can do, so I've just got a few basic examples of things you can do here. So what's quite good, one of my colleagues has created, is essentially a tool to basically run a lot of common tasks. And essentially what this allows you to do is so people don't have to type in different scripts, type in variables of those scripts. And essentially it makes it much simpler, as we know these tests work, so you can give it to your help desk to do common tasks. And basically all they need to do is open this script, click on what they actually want to run, and then it'll go off and do the task for them. So there's no typing involved, no checking variables. You can do this in a very controlled manner. Another example here is we have a script that we use to for a certain customer that we copy voice policies from one environment to another. But basically what we can do here is we can actually do a search against their old environment, and so we can pull out all their current voice policies within that environment. Once they've found that policy there, they can then just click on OK and it goes off and copies into their new environment. So it's another kind of useful thing you can do. And kind of the third one that is quite relevant for what we were talking about earlier about pulling CSV files in is we can actually use some command within the script to actually then pull up a command window. So we can then go off and find a file, which is far more user-friendly than having to type a full path in and having to get the correct name of the file. Okay. So now we're going to move on to some examples. So I'll just say there's a URL on the bottom to say where you can actually get these example scripts from. There's another slide at the end, so there's no rush, and you can also download this slide later, this deck later. So the first one is we're going to run you through this example where we had, where essentially you need to do a check on the certificate store. So essentially this is kind of the assignment and basically what we're trying to achieve with this script. So basically we have an edge server where the certificate scores are filling up on Link 2010 edges. Essentially when this occurs, our service goes down. So essentially we need to find a way of monitoring this with SCOM. And the important bit is this problem doesn't occur in Link 2013. So not everyone needs to panic. So what do we actually do? So the first thing we need to actually be able to do is actually check how big our certificate store is. And essentially a colleague of mine came up with this registry key command to actually then be able to find out how many certificates there were within that store. And so essentially we run this command and then we actually put it into our regkey count variable. Once we have that variable, we're able to then actually create an event message. So we can then create our event message, which basically says there are so many certificates within the accepted store. And then with that information, we can then put some logic around that to actually create our differing events. So we can say here that basically we have a regkey count. If it's less than 299, then just write an informational message to let people know that's what the current count is. Else, if it's larger than 299, it's getting towards 399, so it's getting towards the 400 limit that we've applied, and we get a warning message just to keep people saying, okay, this might be a problem soon. And then finally, if it's more than 400, we write an error message, which we can then use to set SCOM to trigger on the error message to then clear the store down. So what we run in each of these commands, so here's the first one. So this is our example of our warning error. So less than 299. So we can see here, we've got the entry type as informational. And then we just pass our event message through, so we'll get the message. There are, for example, 200 certificates in the store. And then the next one, this is our example for the warning. Very similar, it's just this is more than 299, less than 399. And then we just, the difference is we're putting event type warning in. And finally, our error. So this is the important one. So this is what allows the SCOM message to trigger. And this is a summary of the whole script. So essentially, we have the top part, the top block of script, which actually does the checking, counts the number of certificates that are in the current store. Then the next down, we start getting into our if logic. So if it's less than 999, provide an informational error. Next one down, if it's more than 299 but less than 399, we actually give a warning. And then if it's more, we get the 400 and we get the error. Okay. So now we go on to our second one, which is kind of a topical, useful one that we get quite often. There are certain companies there, one being IBM, who like to do SIP domains by region. So for example, IBM have about 100 SIP domains. So if you ever have a customer want to add IBM as a federated domain, it can take a while to do it by hand. So it's quite a useful script just to add multiple federated domains quickly. So basically what our mission statement is here is we basically want an organization to move into a closed federation model, which means we essentially have to add all of the domains in. And we need to be able to automate the method from a CSV. So the first part here, we have our CSV that we need to use. So simply we just create a small table. We've got three headers. We've got the domain that you actually want to add, their access edge server that you actually want to connect to for that SIP domain, and actually a comment then to actually say who that is. So the first thing we need to do, so this is the .NET code that we actually need to be able to pop up the box, the Explorer box, so actually then going to be able to find that CSV file. So most of this isn't too relevant. Most of it is just generic code. The important bit is we can actually then change kind of the name that appears and the help for the user to actually tell them what file they're looking for. And essentially at the end, this all gets basically put into our dollar file name. So then we have our variable. So then we need to do our import of the CSV file to create our array, which is our dollar feds at the top. And then basically what we need to do is then actually then, because we're creating something here, we want to record what's actually happened and what was successful and what wasn't, we need to then start our transcript. So the first element here is we actually define our transcript name, which here you can see is, and actually put a timestamp on it, and then start our transcription with the code. Okay, so now we have this information. We run a loop on each of it. So basically for each federation domain within feds, we then just run a new CSLoud domain, dash domain, dollar dot domain. And then we add the proxy address information, and then we add the comment, and obviously add the stop script at the end. So hopefully this should all look like this at the end. So just to review, we have at the top, we have our GUI interface to select our file name. Then we import our CSV, set our transcript name, start our transcript, and then for each, and then do our for each loop. Okay, so if anyone liked these, they're available for my colleague SkyDrive. You can take this down or download the deck later on. So what I'd say in creating scripts is a good example. So these are two very simple scripts, and we kind of have some more complex ones that you can do more things with. So kind of an example of some of the things you can do with it, we have a few scripts, one that we can run to do a lot of network checking. So we have a script where we do a lot of network calls, so we can check all the variable ports are available. Site to site, so we have a lot of global entities doing this, so we need to be able to check that firewall ports are open site to site. So we have a PowerShell script to do things like that. Also we have an auditing and as-built document script, so essentially what we can do is we can run a script against a link environment, and we can export the config of an entire environment and then produce an Excel sheet from that. So it's all very powerful, the kind of things you can do. This is kind of what your imagination can take you to and then kind of get into it. One thing I typically say to a lot of people is it's kind of hard to learn PowerShell and do a lot of these scripts without actually having something to aim at. So basically it's good to find a project or something, a task that you need to do yourself to actually be able to then go off and learn how to do it and kind of play with it and get the script to where you want it to be. So that's kind of me finished. But just give you on the resources. So you can go to the Channel 9 website and actually download this presentation and actually download the recording if you wish to. You can also, there are links to the learning, the Technic, and the MSDN sites. And kind of the last slide is, please can you evaluate this session for me afterwards? So there's a QR code if anyone needs it. Or I'm sure by now you know where the website is. So if anyone needs that, I'll leave it. And I kind of finish, has anyone got any questions? If not, I'll be around later on, so you can come and ask me any questions you have. Other than that, thank you for listening to me this afternoon, and hope you all have a good flight home and a good journey home. Thanks very much.